Heidi High campers.
Just boiling the kettle.
It's been a while. I've been very busy. I've been away in Edinburgh for a week with work. I don't know if I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I'm a support worker and working with children and young adults with acquired brain injuries. I won't go too much into that because I'm mindful of, really mindful, as I should be, as a professional, dagnabbit, of confidentiality. But anyway, I've been away for a week looking after a young man, a lovely young man. Whilst I was away, I did get a little bit of respite, really isn't the right word, is it? Because that would imply that he was some sort of burden upon me, which a lad isn't, he's lovely. But I got some time to myself. We were staying on a caravan site and I did get an hour here and there, as is my legal right. And in that time, I worked on a short story. I said from the outset, if you're new to The Intelligent Gentleman, I did posit at the very beginning that this was going to be, it was a rough outline, but I did mention that it would kind of concern my creative writing and the course I'm currently studying, which is advanced creative writing through the Open University. And I've went off tangentially. Sorry, I've digressed quite a lot in the last few episodes. Went on to things such as anxiety and other topics that are relevant to me. Anxiety is still there. It's still buzzing along like television static in my life just now. Even now, because I haven't done this in about 2 weeks, I was quite hesitant to press go live. But I just threw myself in. My fingers did the talking, press go live, here we are, no going back now. I've already mispronounced a word, so I'm over that anxiety of looking like a tit. So now that that's out of the way, I can embrace looking like a tit. I'm just going to make this cup. Which cup do I want? Let's have the jaws go. So yeah, I've been working on a short story. The first assignment for the course was to write a piece, 1500 words. I haven't got the criteria here of what we call the tutor marked assignments, what the criteria was for that, but essentially you just had to write 1500 words of prose, and I believe it could be genre fiction or based on life writing. And the way I went, I finished mine a week early because I knew I'd be away with work. I decided I'd read an article in The Guardian about the re-emergence of pauper funerals, owing to the financial quandary a lot of us find ourselves in. There's been a rise, apparently, in these council-funded, government-funded, but local councils arranged them, what used to be called the pauper funeral, which historically, I think, goes back to the Victorian age, and they used to happen, there'd be 9 o'clock slots each and every time, so they acquired the little sobriquet, park life, of the 9 o'clock trot. So I just found it really interesting, and this hasn't happened in a while. I'm out of practice when it comes to writing short stories. I realise now, in undertaking this course, despite it being advanced, I realise I'm an absolute novice when it comes to this. I am generally, I keep saying, I think it's a bit of a crutch, and I keep saying, and we have an online forum at the OU for this module, so I can talk to fellow students and share ideas and so forth. I keep saying, yeah, I'm doing a short story, but the caveat being I'm more poet. Truthfully, I haven't really studied or worked on my poetry in quite a long time. I've resolved to just start again. I remember, it's a nice bonus, but I'm coming into this completely fresh and with the eyes of a child, as Peter Gabriel sang in Key. And he never sang that, did he? He said the trust of a child. So we're starting again, and it's really interesting. It's nice to just make that admission and say, look, I'm hard of an hour out. I don't know everything, so we're going to try this from the top. And I decided to write based on this article I read. I'm going to read you the story I came out with after I've just glanced over different things in the creative writing handbook that we're issued with. Some really helpful things. Obviously, this podcast is designed for the not just the neurotic hipster types. It's supposed to be a little, I don't know, a journal of my learning to help fellow writers, really, and give them little pointers and recommendations. So, in the book, we studied, I think it was three main topics. The first one was genre, what is genre, then subgenres, using genre, playing and messing with genre, talking about David Mitchell's book Cloud Atlas, how he picks up various... He goes against the grain of the genre he's writing in and adopts different narrative devices and different voices and migrates between different styles of genre. And it sounds like a head fuck of a book. I haven't read it and I don't think I'm interested in reading it, to be honest. But it was very interesting to me to learn about different techniques you can use to play with, I think fundamentally it's just to play with the reader. You're lulling somebody into, say for instance with Cloud Atlas, there seems to be this the seafaring kind of genre at play, he does this is through a diary entry of a seafarer, and then it just jumps to some sort of sci-fi paradigm, again using just little ticks in the language and little devices that are really interesting to me, the little nuances in there, and I guess also not just the voice as in the persona or your approach into the narrative, but also in terms of idiolect. That gives away a lot about the character. Just these little, these tiny considerations that really fascinate me, that are all in play, intertwined in with what's happening paragraph by paragraph. There's a lot there, a lot of consideration from what I gather from the short excerpt I've read from the manual about Cloud Atlas. But the most interesting, the other thing was sort of revision and editing of your work, but the second chapter interested me the most, and that was about conflict and contrast. I'm just leafing through here. Again, I'm doing this all on the fly. I've just got in the house and thought I'd quickly do a podcast because I haven't done one in a couple of weeks. So bear with me. But little devices like points of view, which was beautifully demonstrated by Caroline Duffy's poem, We Remember Your Childhood Well, in which she has taken up the narrative voice. It's third person, but the implication... Anyway, I'll read the poem and then maybe that'll just let you figure out for yourself what I'm trying to get at. It's called We Remember Your Childhood Well. Nobody hurt you. Nobody turned off the light and argued with somebody else all night. The Bad Man on the Moors was only a movie you saw. Nobody locked the door. Your questions were answered fully. No, that didn't occur. You couldn't sing anywhere, anyway, cared less. The moment's a blur, the film fun, laughing itself to death in the coal fire. Anyone's guess. Nobody forced you. You wanted to go that day, begged. You chose the dress. Here are the pictures, look at you, look at us all, smiling and waving, younger. The whole thing is inside your head. What you recall are impressions, we have the facts, we call the tune. The secret police of your childhood were older and wiser than you, bigger. Call back the sound of their voices, boom, boom, boom. Nobody sent you away. That was an extra holiday with people you seemed to like. They were firm, there was nothing to fear. There was none but yourself to blame if it ended in tears. What does it matter now? No, no, nobody left the skid marks of sin on your soul and laid you wide open for hell. You were loved, always. We did what was best. We remember your childhood well. And in the discussion section, it says, the speakers in Duffy's poem
they do seem rather forbiddingly to be in the plural, suggest in an unpleasant way that they have the facts, while the addressee has the impressions. Their voices are made dominant by the way Duffy uses strong internal and final rhymes. Moors, saw, door in the first stanza, occur, blur in the second stanza, and so on. The poem is also structured so that the first, third, and fifth stanzas open with an emphatic short phrase beginning, "Nobody." We can tell that the speakers are intended to be overbearing because Duffy makes them carelessly refer to themselves as the secret police of your childhood. What Duffy has done is to contrast one view with another. Neither is necessarily reliable, although we are plainly meant to side with the addressee. I just thought it was a brilliant... the mechanics of that poem, it's just a brilliantly considered poem. The way she has written from the perspective of must be the parents, I guess you would conclude, all to infer that you can tell from what they're stating as fact, you can then infer what the addressee is feeling. So it's a device to unravel what the addressee feels, that you then emotionally attach yourself to, that you side with, as is discussed there, without simply, she could have written it from her perspective in the first person, and it would be half as interesting, to me anyway. And further in this chapter, you talk about contrasting characters, and the conflicts that rise from their contrasts. And interestingly enough, I marked out a little bit for this, but in a university textbook, Dick Clement and Ian Porridge, bloody Ronnie Barkier gets a mention. Now, I worry about Ronnie. I know he's, God rest his soul. I love folk andals, love it all. The man was a wordsmith. My only concern is that with the rise of these paedophile rings and it seems every beloved, well, David Lee Travis wasn't exact. Well, Jimmy Savile wasn't beloved. Got to be careful here because I'm improvising. I'm talking about paedophiles. What I'm trying to say is, I love Ronnie Barker, and I hope it doesn't come out that he's a paedophile. That was tactful. That'll do. So anyway, we'll talk about props to Dick and Ian here. Notice I skipped over pronouncing Ian's surname. We talked about this in the very first episode, about the vulnerability of doing podcasts. I have no idea how to pronounce it. I'm not even going to try. I said tangentially before, for Christ's sake. So in Porridge, the conflict between the warder McKay and the inmate Fletcher does not come from their being on opposite sides. It comes from the difference in their personalities. McKay is prickly, twitchy, a stickler, humourless. Fletcher is bumptious, relaxed, breezy, witty. I hope somebody describes me one day as bumptious. He's nothing if not bumptious. So that a lot. I mean, it's silly. They're talking about porridge, maybe, and inside of all this scholastic beauty, and we're talking. We've got some great authors here. We're actually used porridge. Probably struck me the most. That was very useful to hear that it's not that they're on opposite sides. That's not where the contrast comes from. It's in their personalities. And the reason I'm going over all this, by the way, is that when I do come to read my story, hopefully, all this will shine through in what I eventually came up. It's more talking about sort of language and sentence structure, talking about clauses and sentences, I guess the phonetics, the cadence of sentences, the stop, start, staccato at times that you can employ. The way they describe this is by using the example of D.H. Lawrence's Bat, the poem Bat. I'll not stand and read that now. We'll go into pace and so forth. So yeah, armed with all that, I attempted to write a short story based on this idea of the, just walking over the kitchen there, based on this article I read about pauper funerals. Let's get sat down here. What I'm going to do now is just jump on the laptop and I am going to find my story and read it to you. And then you can maybe see what I've picked up on, and I know I've just glanced over that very quickly. I am in a bit of a rush here, so I maybe shouldn't be podcasting tonight.
But I got shit to do, man. And if I don't get this done, I'll just hate myself even more than I already do for not making the time. So I run a tight ship here at Hammond Heights. And I'm going to get this some bitch done. And I'm going to share with you my story, son. Yeah, and in the meantime, my list is all loading. I've recently finished Stephen King's memoir on writing, which is kind of a celebration of the craft of writing. And also, as I say, it's a memoir of his life. So I'm going to read from that because I found this book. I've really struggled this month with coming up. When I was writing a story, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. To say the hardest part is getting started. It really is for me. But when I was in it, I was lost in it. I was going to bed thinking about these characters that I'd dreamed up and what their motivations would be, how their personalities would contrast, where I could devise lines of conflict within the story, and use all these interesting little devices that I've been learning about, and moreover, I think what I really want to do is play with the expectations of the reader. And I don't mean that in the kind of crime thriller genre where you put a twist at the end or whatever. I just mean painting characters a certain way. Remember, this is inside a vacuum. We're inside of 1500 words here. It's a lot to try to achieve in such a tight space. But I really wanted to do that. I really wanted to write something where I could establish, say, just a small cast of characters, get as much across as I could via showing, not telling. One of the basic tenets, it's like writing 101, that I don't know if I need to bother going over with you, rather than that annoying kind of Spider-Man cartoon thing where it's all exposition and, I am going to scale this wall to see my Uncle Ben. Getting away from that within, there's so many prose writers where they actually do that, and it's, Christ, it's awful. But Stephen King, the book, I was really lost in the process of writing. I was, like I said, going to bed, dreaming up, trying to think of all the holes in the plot that I needed to cover up, in the context of this, I'm talking about pauper funerals. Actually, I'll not, because I might spoil the story if I start talking about that now. But anyway, I was really enjoying it, and really in it. But then when it came to sort of, after I'd finished the first draft, I then had to jump onto an online forum and share some work with fellow students. And something Stephen King talks about in On Writing is the how important it is to write with the door closed, especially for the first draft, free from distraction, free from anybody else's input, nothing that's going to colour what you're going to do. Just write with the door shut, lock the door, get it done. I subscribe to that wholly. I work much better like that. That probably goes somewhere towards explaining my reticence to participate in a lot of things, and to, you won't find me at sort of writing cafes or even things like Facebook and Twitter. I try to keep that down. I mean, it's hard to resist it when a lot of people you do like and care about are out there, but it can ruin my day jumping on those things. And that speaks somewhat towards this notion of, I don't want to share my work, I don't want to read your work. One, I don't think, in my little world, in my room now, I'm good enough and I'm doing all right, and this is just a first draft. If I share it now, maybe you'll bury it and I'll not be able to shrug that off and continue with it. And there we've just, that's like we've aborted something that had the potential to really be something, which would be a massive shame. Or conversely, the idea that if I read somebody else's work, well, fucking hell, that was great, that was really good, why should I bother? That to me is dangerous, and you want to keep the door shut. So I was glad when Mr. King put that in writing in an actual book on a page thing, because it backed up my little what people might consider a psychosis. Well, no, Stephen King says it's actually quite a good way to go about things, pet. So I'll read a couple of things from King here, because he gave me a massive kick up the keister. Let's start from here. Let me say it again. you must not come lightly to the blank page. I'm not asking you to come reverently or unquestioningly. I'm not asking you to be politically correct or cast aside your sense of humour. Please God, you have one. This isn't a popularity contest. It's not the Moral Olympics and it's not church. But it's writing, damn it. Not washing the car or putting on eyeliner. If you can take it seriously, we can do business. If you can't or won't, it's time for you to close the book and do something else. Wash the car, maybe. If that isn't a clarion call or a rally cry, to pick up a quill and get your shit on, son, then I don't know what is. I could watch Rocky through to Rocky V, perhaps even Rocky Balboa, and I wouldn't feel half as inspired. I needed that on page 118. I really needed that at the time because I was struggling. I was treading water. I'm back there again, mind, but I've just read it out again, so I'm feeling a bit better. So that's handy. A couple other things King does is he recommends a book that I also want to recommend to you. It's a scream, actually. It's funny, I was in my podcast listening. I've subscribed to, I think it was a BBC 4 programme about books and their authors. And I think it's the Goodreads podcast I was listening to. And I picked one arbitrarily the other night to fall asleep to. And, pardon me. Funnily enough, Goodreads, you wouldn't think that a style guide for writers would get mentioned, much less the one that I've just bought that's been recommended by Stephen King, but Kismet, the gentleman on the podcast was talking it up a storm, you know, and everyone on the panel was saying, what, you really seriously take this, say, on a desert island? He said, oh yeah, it's as good a yarn as any novel I've read, and it is quite funny because I think it was originally published in 1918, so quite a lot of it, I think it does get lambasted because it doesn't account for changes in language, for the evolution of language, so it's quite rigid at times, but it's charming for it, I think. Just some of the things that you go and look for it. If you, I've got a physical copy here. It's by William Strunk and E.B. White, and I think Strunk was White's professor, and White is the author of Charlotte's Web fame, if you care to know. If you go on Google and just look for a PDF, you can find one straight away. Get that on your Android and your fucking iPad, your shit for brains and all that. Have a read, it's great. And King really speaks highly of this book throughout on writing. He talks about grammar in terms of... I mean, I've never been a grammar Nazi. People seem to have this misconception of me that I have a very strong grasp of grammar through my writing. I've not really been too studious when it comes to it. I guess I've got the basics, which King mentions, if you haven't got the basics now, it's perhaps too late. But I would counter that. I would say you pick up a book like The Elements of Style, you could refresh in a day, and then just get practice and just get writing, and you'll be fine. Basically, there's sort of three key points I would take from this that are useful to your prose writing, and it's the age-old adverb the adverb question. I omit adverbs as much as I can because they are weak. They do weaken everything. They're just I think King has a similar way of putting it. I haven't earmarked that page here, but you know, John said flatly, or John said whimsically, John said giddily. Just keep it to John said, or if it's obvious who's speaking within the dialogue, don't even say John said. Just what is the point? It's such flowery shit that just don't be wary of the adverb. I take the line that King does as well. Don't omit it to all else. Just be careful with it. You can't use them, but just be sparing. The other main sort of grammatical lesson I took away was regarding the passive verb. So King says, the timid fellow writes, the meeting will be held at 7 o'clock, because that somehow says to him, put it this way and people will believe you really know.
Purge this quizzling thought. Don't be a muggle. Throw back your shoulders, stick out your chin, and put that meeting in charge. Right, the meeting's at 7. There, by God, don't you feel better? I won't say there's no place for the passive tense. Suppose, for instance, a fellow dies in the kitchen but ends up somewhere else. The body was carried from the kitchen and placed on the parlour sofa is a fair way to put this, although it was carried and was placed still irk the shit out of me. I accept them, but I don't embrace them. What I would embrace is Freddy and Myra carried the body out of the kitchen and laid it on the parlour sofa. Why does the body have to be the subject of the sentence anyway? It's dead, for Christ's sake. Forget about it. King actually writes it like that. I'm not just riffing sort of New York Italian. Those are his words. So they're two main stylistic considerations for you that come via Stephen King and the elements of style. So there's a little taster for you. I would strongly recommend both books, just to get your creative juices pumping, as they did for me, and I was able to finish this short story in no small part thanks to those two things, those two books. Let's think. The other couple of things that King really imbued in me was sometimes, you know, when you're writing with the door shut, that's all well and good, but try to have an ideal reader in mind. So his is sweetheart, darling Tabitha, his wife. So just keep them in mind maybe when you're writing, and let them be the first to see an initial draft and to offer constructive criticism. I find that really helpful, because there's a tendency, as I think Russell Brand has demonstrated, just to go off on one in a first draft, which apparently the book he's just released seems to be just a first draft. If his little Newsnight stint is anything, I'm digressing massively there. This isn't a podcast about burying Russell Brand after all. So anyway, I'll end this first part here. I know it's been a bit ramshackle and all over the place, but hopefully it picks something up out of it, and I'll immediately start the second part as soon as we go off air here, and I'll actually read out the story I came up with, which I have called The Plot. Okay, see you in part 2.